Welcome. My name is Ezekiel Oburu. I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Nairobi Spine and Orthopedic Center, and I also teach at the University of Nairobi. Our topic of discussion today is developmental dysplasia of the hip. Developmental dysplasia of the hip is an abnormal development resulting in a spectrum of hip subluxation, acetabular dysplasia, and possibly dislocation of the hip due to mechanical instability and capsular laxity. What is the epidemiology? It is the most common orthopedic disorder in newborns, with the left hip most commonly affected at about 60%, and it may be bilateral in 20%. The incident is 1 to 2 in 100,000, but in actual dislocation, it is 1 to 1,000. Females are more affected than males at a ratio of about 5 to 1. There is a high incidence in certain populations like the Native American or the Eastern Europeans. There is a low incidence in Africans and in Chinese population. So, what is the etiology? The exact etiology is unknown. However, there are quite a number of risk factors. Family history is positive in about 10 to 30% of patients with developmental dysplasia of the hip. Fetal malposition, as in breech presentation, is a risk factor, as is inadequate uterine space in conditions like oligohydramnios, twins, or macrosomia. Firstborn children due to unstretched uterus are at an increased risk, and as we've said above, girls are more affected. So what is the pathophysiology? The femoral head provides a template around which the acetabulum is molded, and the absence of the femoral head in the acetabulum results in an abnormally developed and shallow acetabulum. This causes the hip to be unstable and to easily dislocate. So, how do we determine whether a child has developmental dysplasia or not? What is the clinical presentation? The clinical presentation really varies with age. When you have a newborn, or really a child that is less than 6 months of age, it is usually asymptomatic. But when you evaluate them, because all newborns need to be evaluated for developmental dysplasia of the hip, there are certain signs that you may get. Number one is the Ottolani sign. The Ottolani sign is a palpable clank. And this is not a click, because a click may be normal in a newborn child. This palpable clank is caused by the hip reduction when the hip is flexed and abducted while applying an upward pressure. This is to check if the hip is dislocated or not. And then there is the Barlow sign. This is a palpable clank that is caused by hip dislocation when the hip is flexed and adducted with application of a downward pressure. This is to check if you can dislocate or subluxate the hip. One of the things that I have found in trying to learn about developmental dysplasia is all the confusing things that a young doctor may be faced with. What to do with a child with a hip that they think has a problem. And there are recommendations by the American Academy of Pediatricians, especially with regards to developmental dysplasia, that I think can go a long way with helping you to diagnose and to manage some of these conditions. So all newborns should be screened by physical examination and not ultrasound. The importance of this is the following, that if you do an ultrasound screening, you may find a much higher incidence of this condition than there really is, because a number of these cases that you may really suspect the patient has developmental dysplasia on ultrasound will really resolve by 6 weeks. So what is the clinical presentation? If the child is less than 6 months, it is usually asymptomatic with either a positive Barlow or Ottolani sign. What is Ottolani's? Ottolani's sign is when you have a palpable clank, not a click, because a click may be normal. And this palpable clank is caused by the hip reduction when the hip is flexed and abducted while applying an upward pressure. This is to check if the hip is dislocated or not. Barlow's sign is a palpable clank that is caused by hip dislocation when the hip is flexed and adducted with application of a downward pressure. This is to check if you can dislocate or subluxate the hip. So, how do you determine which children or which child will need treatment for developmental dysplasia or not, based on when you see them? Now, like we said, that in the initial period, really between the ages of 0 and 6 months, that this may be asymptomatic. All newborns, however, should be screened with physical examination and not ultrasound, because when you perform an ultrasound, you will find that a number of them will be positive for developmental dysplasia, but this may actually resolve in 6 weeks. If the Ottolani or Barlow's test is positive, then you really need to refer the patient to an orthopedic surgeon. If it is equivocal, that is, you get a click, you may repeat the examination in 2 weeks, and if you still get another click, refer to the orthopedic surgeon. If you get a clank, that's different. You need to do an ultrasound. However, in our setup, really, you need to refer to an orthopedic surgeon. Let me add that really you need to refer to a pediatric orthopedic surgeon, because they would have the necessary experience to treat this patient. If you continue getting a negative examination, you can also look at the risk factors. If the risk factors are present, such as if there's a positive family history of developmental dysplasia or there is bridge presentation for boys, then you can evaluate the hips in 2 weeks' time. And if it is for a female, you really need to get an ultrasound at the age of 6 weeks. And I presume you would have referred this patient to an orthopedic surgeon. So let me say that every time a baby is seen by a doctor during a well baby visit, one should always evaluate the hip. What about in the later months, that is 6 to 18 months? If there is inability to abduct the hip, so the parent may say that changing diapers is really difficult, Barlow's and Ottolani's sign disappear by this time. In fact, by the age of 4 months, it may be difficult to either elicit a Barlow or Ottolani's sign, but you may get a Galeazzi sign, which is usually prominent. And what is a Galeazzi sign? It is an equal knee height and apparently shorter femur when the child is placed supine with the hips and knee flexed. You may get asymmetrical gluteal folds, but this may also be normal in some children. So those are the signs between the ages of 6 and 18 months. What about if the child presents at 18 months? They may have a Trendelenburg by gait, or they may be limping in unilateral cases, or have a waddling gait in bilateral cases. They may have a limb length discrepancy, or they may have toe walking to compensate for the difference in length, and possibly a lumbar lordosis. So how do you make a diagnosis of developmental dysplasia of the hip? Well, history taking and clinical examination are very important. And then we say that you need to do an ultrasound. I have given some guidelines with regards to which patients should get an ultrasound and which ones should not. An ultrasound is the imaging of choice for infants younger than 4 months, because ossification of the infant will appear between 4 to 6 months. However, a diagnosis of developmental dysplasia of the hip before 6 weeks should be based on physical examination rather than ultrasound findings, because up to 90% of these abnormalities are identified by ultrasound but may actually resolve spontaneously by the 6 week. What about a pelvic x-ray? Well, if the infant is more than 4 months, really, sometimes up to 6 months, you may find dislocation that is shown by interruption of the Shenton's line. The ossified nucleus of the femoral head will lie at or above the heel geranus line, really, and the ossified nucleus of the femoral head would lie at or lateral to the Parkinson's line. I would really say the best way of understanding heel geranus line, which is a horizontal line through the right and left triradiate cartilage, is by looking at an x-ray. The same is for Parkinson's line, which is a line that's perpendicular to the heel geranus line through a point at the lateral margin of the acetabulum. If a child is less than 6 months, then a pelvic harness, which maintains the hips at 90 to 100 degrees of flexion and 50 degrees of abduction, is what is used in order to achieve concentric reduction of the femoral head. If a child is 6 to 18 months, or you have failure of bracing, or even really at 4 months, then close reduction followed by immobilization with a hip spiker cast will be done for 12 weeks. After 6 weeks, you would image the child again, and then you will repeat the casting for another 6 weeks. If a child is more than 18 months or there is failure of close reduction, then surgical therapy, open reduction, possibly with a pelvic and femoral osteotomy, followed by immobilization with a hip spiker cast, is the way to go. The details of which are really beyond the scope of this podcast. If you have an older child or an adolescent with symptoms of arthritis, then really you would consider total hip replacement. However, we very rarely do this in people who are young, that is, people who are less than the age of 20 or people who are less than the age of 30, unless it is very exceptional circumstances. So what are the complications? Early osteoarthritis of the hip may happen. The patient may also have a leg length discrepancy, especially when this is unilateral, and the treatment can result in a vascular necrosis of the femoral epiphyses, or you may have a transient femoral nerve palsy, even when treated with a pelvic harness. So what's the prognosis? The prognosis is generally good in patients who receive early treatment. Poor prognosis is associated with late initiation of treatment and the need for open reduction. Thank you very much.